welcome to Be Simply. This is She, and I want to give thanks for everyone that's connecting in this moment. Today, we are going to connect to a very special artist that works with nature. His name is Andres Amador, and we will weave our way through water, sand, light, impermanence, and so much more. Before we dive in, I'd like to shine a light on another organization that works with nature. They work with organic living tea. It's called Living Tea. You can connect to them at the link below and enjoy connecting with nature in your everyday practice of simply drinking tea. Without further ado, let's dive in with Andres.
Andres, I want to thank you for joining us today. I'm really excited about celebrating your art, your gift for creating with nature. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's my pleasure and honor as well.
So what inspired me about your work is, I think we'll dive in with this word impermanence that we were just talking about, the idea that you actually create these beautiful masterpieces in nature and then they wash away. You touch a little bit this on your website, but can you share with me a little bit more about what that means for you and what it's revealed to you over time?
The idea of impermanence.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's an aspect of the art that it came with the art by virtue of the location I was doing it. It wasn't necessarily my intention. The beach was just an amazing canvas for what I realized I could do. But what comes with being at the beach is that the tide, well, what offers me the canvas is the low tide after a good high tide, and I have a white beach. So, of course, the next high tide will take everything away. Now, the great thing at a logistical level is that I have a fresh canvas the next day. But at the metaphysical level, there's so much else has come to me as a result of being exposed to engaging the idea of impermanence at such a micro and constant level. There's so much I could speak to it at this point. And very interesting things have arisen as a result of this side of it. I've been having a number of people, these are totally unrelated folks just kind of popping up, who have had death in their lives, either recently, actually several people for whom it has yet to occur, but it's expected. And something occurred 10 years ago, and they want to do something. They just are feeling called to work with me and to do something around the experience that they're having. So that's been a new kind of twist on this side of the art that the art has seemed to have brought into my experience, along with the idea of impermanence.
And so what was the seed inception beyond the canvas that called you to the beach? And what was that first calling to create with the earth and the ocean?
Well, my original, initially I was creating artwork that was sculpturally based, large-scale creations. I was using more artificial materials. I was looking for natural materials like bamboo and so forth, but I was having a hard time working with those. And so there's kind of a side of me that is very, very ecologically sensitive and, you know, very sensitive to the plights of the world. And there have been times in my life where I've felt that I've shut myself down to feeling just the state of things, and or at least one way of perceiving the state of things, which can be full of suffering, you know, at the global level or at the human level. And I think art was a way for me to engage my emotional body, but to guide it in a way where there was a creative aspect to it. I could look back and see that now. It's definitely not how I was perceiving it at the time. It felt very fine. It felt like a spirit liberating activity, and it brought me joy, and continues to. It's always a driving factor, is the joy that I get. And so, but back when I was doing the sculptural art, I had would have all this stuff that I have to take to a place and bring home. My garage is just bursting with all my sculptures. And I was doing these setups for a lot of festivals, and I was doing my art down in a basement in the dark, because it was all blacklight related, kind of psychedelically oriented. And in terms of its visual quality, playing with the way that our eyes take in light. And it was very interesting art. I love it. It's very fascinating. Has more of an intellectual quality to it for me. And cause I kind of have that orientation, scientifically minded. And so they all have, my sculptures would have had a geometric underpinning. And because they're three-dimensional, and I would create things like a stellated tetrahedron, which some might call the Star of David in three-dimensional form, or the Merkaba. Different shapes like that have had that cultures and people traditions have created meaning around, whether that was inspired by some connection to, you know, something beyond the earthly experience, or whether it was something that was an analogy that helped us as a metaphor for you know, guiding our own lives. And either way, it kind of falls into the realm of sacred geometry. And people would ask me what these shapes meant, and I didn't have an answer, because they just kind of arose on their own. I started to do some research so that I could have a way to talk about it and have a better sense of what I was tapping into. And so I started researching sacred geometry, read many books, and that got me into the realm, that got me looking at crop circles and other type of large-scale phenomena around the world, of which there are many, although crop circles would be the most current kind of manifestation of this type of thing. I don't know what's behind the crop circles, honestly. It's still kind of a mystery to me. I know some people are involved in some of them, but I really can't. Now that I've done my work, I look at crop circles, and I don't understand how some of them are done. In the precision that they are done, it's really kind of baffling. That had me looking at the designs behind crop circles, like how would you draw one of these if it was on paper? What would be the steps involved? And so I was doing that. And so the story is that I was in Hawaii. I was on Kauai and for a month, and I brought a bunch of books with me and a bunch of different kind of material to study. And I did a two-day hiking trip into the beach, the remote beach called Kalalau Valley, which is a sacred valley, a remote beach, and the whole setting is just unbelievably gorgeous and incredibly dramatic with the waves, and you couldn't step foot in the water, you would have been just crushed, and there's just so much power in this location. And while I was there with a friend, we started playing in the beach. At the time, I was involved in fire dancing. I was part of a performance troupe. And that was my first experience with tangibly moving with energy in the way that martial arts really is at heart what it's about, harnessing energy and moving with energy, guiding energy. So that was my first opportunity doing that. And so we were very much into spinning objects like a staff. My thing was a big staff. And so we were playing on the beach with our walking sticks, kind of playing, and then that turned into drawing in the beach. And then one of us made a circle, and I realized, here's a circle. Well, this is what the circle means. This is what is represented, you know, to cultures, various cultures. And I started talking about the circle, the everything. Circle represents essentially the everything and the undifferentiated, the unity. And then the two circles, the same sort of circle kind of separated, you know, one circle done on the line of the other circles that they kind of reach inside of each other's center point. The two circles, what that means, the multiplicity, the various things as they as they show up. I think in Chinese tradition, that would be the 10,000 things. So then in between, that little half circle in between, called the Vesca Pisces, was the heaven and the earth, and then the in-between realm, which for my studies in Christianity, that was considered Jesus. And that's why the little fish sign, the space between the two circles. And so I was showing my friend these various things, and the triangle and the 3 points and the six around one, and very interesting. Really, they're geometric principles, the geometric creations. And then there's meaning that's been derived from them that has helped cultures, our ancestors, and the priest class, were, this is what they were about, is interpreting, seeing these ways that these kind of transnatural awarenesses, where that kind of help people see into the substructure of reality. And for them, it was the mind of God. So while I was doing that, setting up these circles, doing something that would have been akin to the like the flower of life design of the repeated overlapping circles, I realized that I was creating the initial steps to a crop circle, were you to draw one. Because then in a crop circle, you start from these places. You find your lines that later will become the scaffold for the rest of the design. And then you start to flesh it out. And then afterwards, after you have your scaffold, you start to fill in certain parts of it. And that's where the drawing really emerges. Mm. And so I had a flash that I could, and if I could have a visual, it would be as though a light came down from the heavens, and you know, I'm there shaking on the beach, realizing I could see perfectly that I could do these enormous designs on the beach and in San Francisco, and I couldn't wait to get back to San Francisco. So I had a few more weeks of waiting, and the beaches there in Hawaii were just not very good. They're very steep, right. And they drained very quickly, and the grains were kind of coarse. But as soon as I got back to San Francisco, I tried out. It's really the very next day. I tried out a design. I got it. Absolutely, this is a yes. And the next day, I went back with some tools, with the rake and a rope and a stake, so that I could make circles a bit more uniform. And it was kind of, I hit the ground running. Mm. Okay, I think I may have, that was a long story with, you said,
Well, no, it's beautiful. Why a beach? You were in Kawaii.
The beach told me.
Yeah.
And in fact, it really does feel as though this art wanted to emerge, and it chose me to emerge through, is how it actually feels, because in all the steps, it just came to me. I wasn't setting out to try to figure out a problem to solve, and it didn't go to a place and go through. It didn't emerge suddenly. I mean, it didn't emerge in bits and pieces. It emerged all at once,
right.
Pretty much as it was going to be from then on out. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that's changed since is the techniques that I use and the approach that I'm taking. And that has sent me on its own journey, but even that part of it feels like it's the art kind of wanting to express itself through me.
Hmm. And the first time I saw your artwork, I was really, it brought me back to a place in the Philippines I've been called Boracay, and it feels like you're in a dream the whole time. You're like, there's this resonance that you're going, what is going on? Because this isn't completely so static, if that makes sense. You just feel the vibration. And the kids, they sat there and they would draw these mandalas with a stick, but with perfect geometry. Just one hand, just joyous. And I was just like, wow, that would take a long time because my background's architecture. I'm like, really? I kept looking at them. There's a lot of crystal matter there, but also they were in such harmony and joy with the experience. So your artwork reminded me of that. I'm like, wow, he's like those cute boys in the Philippines that were making these beautiful mandalas on the beach.
Wow.
If you can share the, because when you mentioned the crop circles, because that was another resonance, I was like, wow, he's like, also, you are your own crop circle maker.
Yeah.
If you can share where the inspiration comes for you, or do you feel this calling, like, okay, it's time to go to the beach, or do you wait for that, or do you plan it out? when you're going to be there, or how does this all arrive to you?
There is kind of a natural cue, which is when the tides are appropriate. And according to different locations, the tide, well, that's the master. That determines everything. The tide and the daylight. So I look at when the tides are good throughout the year. And then there's, you know, my life. So how does my life align with the tides? And when the opportunity is there, then I go for it. And such as, well, things are shifting now. Now there's been a much greater demand for me working, so it's not as much a personal decision as it is there's more of, I wouldn't say business, but, you know, that would probably be the best way to say it, that I'm doing commissions for others, so there's the business side. So that would then, there's a motive that is not purely one of inspiration in the moment. Otherwise, I usually, when life would bring me towards the beach, I'd look for when there's opportunities, and then I do it. So maybe the divine inspiration is really the alignment of my life cycle with the tide cycle.
You're creating some kind of rhythm there.
Yeah, I'm responding to a rhythm that is beyond me, for sure.
Mm.
That includes me.
Good. Within that rhythm and that ebb and flow, what do you feel, because you're obviously in such harmony, like I said, those little boys in Boracay, with the earth, what is in each, not each one, because that would be impossible, we'd probably be here a while for you to share each one, but what are some of the profound lessons that you've learned in some of the pieces that you've created?
Okay, so I think it's number two, should look like a several yin-yangs. It's called dynamic equilibrium. Be another way. All right. Well, I'll just speak to it.
You go ahead and I'll find it. I'm going to write that one down. So go ahead.
Okay.
Yep.
I did this design early on in my, like this was maybe within the first year that I was doing the designs for the artwork on the beach, this one happened. And it was a result of playing with shapes and designs. So at the time it was very intuitive. I wasn't going for anything in particular, just playing with shapes and so forth, more from almost from like a drafting kind of approach, and just seeing what relationships would emerge just by kind of geometric doodling. And I happened upon one of the things I was able to tease out of the shapes was this design of these kind of yin-yangs. I tend to stay away from already like images that's already fully and saturated. I would like to have feel like I'm creating something unique and add a unique voice. And so I wouldn't do the yin yang, even though I resonate with the principles that that it offers. And but when this came to me, I thought, oh, this is an interesting take on it. So I decided to do it. So I did this piece, and afterwards, I have a print, and so I had the print near me. And upon reflecting on this image, you know, it took a little bit, but after a while, a message started to emerge, and it then became one that actually has been a guiding principle for me, and one that I've used when I am offering advice or consolation to others. And it's the idea that so in the traditional yin-yang symbol, there's like the two parts, these two little fish are revolving around each other. And, they both contain aspects of the other and they're in motion. But essentially, so they have a sense of dynamism. However, they're revolving around a single center point. And so in their way, they're encapsulated. And in that way, they have a type of staticness to them. And what this image is showing is there's the smallest yin-yang, which just shows one fish, just for maybe for artistic purposes, just showing one. And then there's the the second one, there's a circle there still. The second one has a complete circle. The third one doesn't have a complete circle. What this became, the message that started to emerge was that the yin-yang has balance in it. At some points in our lives, the balance is broken, and that's represented by the third biggest fish that doesn't have its opposite, and so therefore is kind of free-floating at the moment. And if you could imagine, whereas the other ones are spinning around a central point, that one has nothing to spin around, and so its movement would actually be chaotic. It would be off balance. What I see this as representing is there are times in our lives where we are in some type of balance. We're in a routine of some sort. We have a sense of ourselves, and something happens that really shakes up our notion of who we are or shakes up the status quo. And when that happens, we're off balance. And we may be off balance for a while until we're able to reintegrate. And when we integrate, at some point, we'll be balanced again. At the bigger level, and this is for the things that really do matter within our lives, when we emerge from that balance, we've emerged bigger. There's something larger that's occurring. And when we are able to move through it, it's a different being that has emerged. That's what's represented within this imagery. And the consolation that I find from it is that when things are, and I've had several episodes of this in my life, and when I'm with friends for whom something traumatic is occurring, or they're just whatever it might be, relationship or whatever, that the imbalance that's being experienced, it's reflecting that us as a being are finding our new balance, but that it will come. It absolutely will come, and that's the consolation, that we're not in it now, but it will happen. And when it does, we are going, well, if we can do this consciously, and that really is the key to everything, then we will emerge as stronger, larger beings that can encompass more. And that's part of evolution. This is the process of evolution. At each stage of the evolution of our consciousness really is marked by something generally that has a traumatic quality because it's shaking things up so big. I think later in life, we can approach evolution, conscious evolution, with consciousness, and it's not a traumatic experience. yeah, that's the goal.
Hence the beautiful tide that comes in and just takes it away, and you say, ah.
Yes.
Kicking and screaming.
Right. Definitely.
So beautiful. And ironically enough, that's number 66. so perfect.
Dynamic equilibrium or punctuated equilibrium? I forget
punctuated
which one.
Punctuated equilibrium.
Punctuated equilibrium. Okay. I took a more that's a scientific name, actually. And it's the name for the idea that an evolution of species throughout history, going back millions of years, that there are periods of, it's an actual concept, but there are periods of stasis, or balance, I should say, where there's not the number of new species happening and the number of species going extinct there's kind of a stasis to it. And then something big happens, a meteor hits, or there's some global shift of some sort, and there's massive change, which really, in the evolutionary perspective, is massive die-off and massive extinction. And it doesn't have to be massive, but that's kind of, when you look at the global level, that's what's happening. And then after that, there's massive speciation because new niches are opened up, and so all this divergence occurs, and so many new species emerge. And then after that period has happened, then there's stasis again. And that can go on for many, many millions of years until the next thing.
Now that we let go of suffering.
Well, yeah, I mean, but even then, you know, there's always levels to the ego that we can, release ourselves from. And each one has its own type of suffering perhaps involved. It's just the suffering doesn't need to be so, we don't need to suffer so much through that period.
Exactly.
But it can feel like suffering for a moment at least.
Right. Agreed. That's so beautiful.
Let's see, letting go, right, of release. And I was just kind of starting to talk about it.
Yes.
About the process. And actually, this relates to a previous question on lessons that I've gotten from pieces. And this actually relates to a very big lesson that came from a piece that really struck home this kind of idea of letting go. And perfection, when I started moving towards the organic arts, it was more of a creation in the moment. And so there wasn't a particular way that it needed to look. And that was very liberating, because then I could be more in the moment creating. And there would be variations in what was happening. You didn't quite see if things weren't exactly aligned, because they didn't need to be. Okay, so early on, still as I was doing this, I could get to the beach, and it was just not good for me, not good for the art. So there's a location that I have several plans to do things, and there was a big storm, and last week it was amazing, and I went back a couple days ago, and it's not usable at all. Like, most of the sand is washed away, which just happens during the seasons. Like, I've had to release using that location. But anytime I go to the beach, there's a potential that it's not going to work out as I'd hoped. So whenever I get to the beach, I'm already letting go of the results. And I had to get that lesson early on, because it could be very frustrating otherwise. Like, there's so many factors out of my control. So then a big lesson in this idea of letting go occurred when I was doing a group project. So it was one of the ones where I did a workshop and invited the public, and especially on those days, I let go of the result, because it can be very difficult to guide a bunch of people, let alone a bunch of people who've never done this before, and you know, who just don't have the kind of critical eye that I might, or the technique that you know I'm employing. It just has come with the time, and so but still, I'm always kind of striving for something cohesive and, you know, something I can show as an image later. So I was leading this one group, and this was the one called Cracks that you can look at. And so the way we did it was we got in a circle, tight circle, facing our rakes into the center, so they all touched. And then at the same time, we all walked away. And so my direction was just walk away in a straight line, just keep walking. And then we did that, and we'd reconvene and did that process several times in different locations. And then we went back, and wherever the lines intersected, we would make a little rounded curve. And then I kind of filled in some other spots. So it was a very simple process. As we were doing it, I kind of looked back. As I'm doing my line, I'm looking back, and people are kind of going in curves, and the rake is kind of making a line, and it's just a little bit like, and my thought at the time was, and you can beat me out, beeping up the piece, it's not working. Okay, now, you know, I always have to have my moment of like, oh, it's not going to be like I wanted it, okay, then I let it go. But so we kept going, and we kept doing it, and as we were nearing completion, I stepped back up on the overlook just to get a sense of it. I was immediately struck with how amazing it was. The big realization I had was that imperfection, if I had done it myself, it would have had a type of regularity that, and I have my own sketch of it, that it would have looked a certain way. And I was fine with how, you know, with what I was going for, but what ultimately ended up resulting was a piece that actually felt far more organic and warm. I could relate to it much more. And the realization was that imperfection that's an essential aspect of the world and of people and of our experience. And when we're in the presence of perfection, I think that's why it always has a spiritual quality in mandalas, because it's so perfect that they're just not of this world, and so they immediately evoke something else. But the organic ones, and since that time, I've taken that to heart, this lesson of imperfection is okay. In fact, it's desired. That's what tells us that it was done by a person, or that it's of this earthly realm, and we're drawn to that. But I had to let go of this idea of perfection. And you know, have everything right, because that's not really how things are, and it's actually that's yeah, everything becomes better when we can accept that that's not really the way things are. Mm. That was a huge lesson.
Beautiful.
And since that time, I've been able to be much more forgiving with myself when I do the art or when I'm working with other people, and even build in that potential that there can just be like happy, you know, accidents that occur.
When you're speaking, you're reminding me when I was at the Acropolis. I don't know if you've ever been there.
No.
But the columns are so perfect, and being in background architecture, I was like, I don't really know where this is from, because there's no way a human could have made this. Because even today's machinery, we couldn't make those flutes to the perfection that they were made, even with a mold.
Wow.
I've had friends say that about the pyramids, that the angles on the corners are so precise that it makes you feel like it's from another world, plopped here on planet Earth.
Yeah, I mean, all the great cathedrals,
yep,
and the amazing works of art or temples and architecture, they're astounding, and they really do. I mean, they were meant to inspire that feeling.
We might be all surprised someday when they lift the veil.
Right.
Oh, we're on an Earth set. So, I love that. Yeah. And if you can share a little bit more about that gift that you've received with the human touch, that what that means, that imperfection, which is actually perfection, because, you know, it was man-made. And please approach it how you want to approach it, not how I led you there.
Do you have a specific question within it?
Well, I'm just, like, even what the story you just shared was so... is just so beautiful, and that maybe over time what you've realized in that gift of imperfection, I don't know what the feeling is
okay.
there.
Okay, well, whenever we look really deeply into something, we'll find that life is full of imperfection. Like if we were to take a microscope and look down at something that we think is a perfect surface, we'll see that it's just riddled with holes. Or that it's just this crazy, you know, assemblage of whatever particles. So what we experience as reality is actually quite messy when you look really closely. Especially now that I'm using a remote-controlled helicopter to take my photos, I'm able to get such a scale, and I'm only just starting to play with this. I'm able to get so far away from the piece and take in such a larger image that imperfections that are immediately noticeable on the ground completely disappear when you step back. And actually, that's a very profound recognition. So, for instance, recently I'll send you this picture. It's a great one. I was just in Santa Cruz last week doing a artwork in collaboration with the Santa Cruz Symphony. I did this enormous piece in front of the boardwalk. I wanted something that would be in an iconic location. I'm working with the director of the Santa Cruz Symphony, and so I started my line, and there was so much seaweed from the previous high tide that it was just, if I had used a rake, I would be stopping and starting all the time, and I would lose my flow, and I needed to do these really long curves, really long. It's one of the biggest pieces I've done, and I was quite ambitious. I did bite off more than I could realistically manage, and by the end, I was running across this beach to catch it before the sunset. It's a beautiful shot, and I'll send it to you. So I was doing that part, and I had him come behind me to rake this piece. And as I was going back over, you know, I would see him kind of working, and I'd see his line, and it was all shaky, and it was kind of not in the straight lines, and it was kind of bouncing around sometimes, and I was thinking, you know, it's not his fault, but it's like, oh, this thing that I'm trying to do this thing, and it's not going to, you know, work out. But I had to remind myself that the scale that I'll be looking at this, what I'm seeing right here, won't matter. And that indeed was the case. But it's hard to separate from our immediate experience of reality to what the other perspectives, you know, are. And, you know, we're used to, and this is one of the things with the art is that people ask me, how do you do something so big? How do you keep it together? How do you, you know, these kind of questions about scale. And that's been, now that I'm starting to work with a new level of scale, because I can take a photo from so far away, I can go up to 700 feet in the air, which is a, you can get huge landscape from that level, from that height. And so it requires a new type of, like, all the lines need to be thicker. I have to conceive of what I'm doing on the ground in a different way. And so it's reminding me again of this process of just being aware of scale, which I had to do initially, and now I'm having to redo it, because initially all my scale was just based on the overlook that I could get to, which usually is not that high. There's only one place in California where the overlook is so high that it's akin to the helicopter. And I haven't had much experience there. The lesson it's giving me is that it's easy to look at, and this is a metaphorical thing and a metaphysical thing, it's easy to see the imperfections in the reality that we experience. But when we shift our position, or in the case of my art, or which is a shift of position, but this position when we can really pull back from whatever it is, we see that there actually, there's a harmony there, regardless of this little hiccup, there's still a greater cycle that is working beautifully. You know, reorient myself to this awareness, and then I can easily put myself back in a type of flow that really is what it's all about.
Beautifully said. I'm just imagining us all dancing around in our own relationships with one another and other people if we just could reposition ourselves 700 feet above. Or
similar to reposition ourselves from several years away.
Yep.
You know, when we look back at something, it's, oh, that really wasn't a big deal, even though it seems so monumental in the moment.
Yes.
Or, you know, this accident or paying this much for something, you know, seems so big, but actually what's money in the scheme of things?
Right.
When I did Vipassana several years ago, and then afterwards, in the week that followed, I had a couple of situations, one in particular where I had to call upon it, or it actually just arose spontaneously, you know, what I had gotten from the Vipassana, where I was doing some demolition of the structure, and there was some PVC that was under tension, and I was straddling it to pull it out of some stakes, and when I did it, sprang upwards, right crotch, and there was an instantaneous moment of, like, just panic, and, you know, that inhale of that calm before the storm,
yeah.
So where there was no sensation, I knew it was going to be bad, and then, like, you know, where you see that kid have a fall, and then there's, like, the pause,
yeah,
and then the wail. And, yeah, and the deeper the pause, the more you know the wail will be. And so I was on that side of it, on the ground, just, like, writhing. Spontaneously, I had this sensation of, what are my toes feeling like? Spread my awareness down to my feet or to my hands, or just spread it around my body. And when I did that, immediately this sensation diminished. And it wasn't gone entirely, but I was able to start breathing and just relax. And it was a moment to recognize that the lesson from the Vipassana, a lesson, perhaps the biggest one, which is that there is so much happening in our experience, and it's easy to fixate on one particular aspect of our experience in any particular moment. And if that aspect is causing us suffering, then that suffering will magnify to be our entire experience, potentially. But if we can reorient to the whole, change our perspective to include all of it, then we recognize how much is going right. In fact, the majority is going right the majority of the time. And there's just a little bit that's not going so well. And when we can reorient to that, then so much of our experience is really, so much of the suffering that we experience in our experience diminishes.
Well
said. So this art, the new scale of the art actually has been a really good visual representation of that awareness.
And then you have impermanence, and then, wow, it's just everything.
Yeah, yeah, it's everything.
You just need to start having your own Vipassana right there on the beach, and we'll have quite an astounding experience, you know?
You know, one of the next things actually I'm working on is meditation retreats, doing the art beach.
Beautiful. Yeah. Sounds good to me. what I'd love for you to do is, I have everyone orate their website. The links are below, but I feel it's important. And what you have up and coming. I know you mentioned a couple that you're going to start trying to have your outings once a month, but whatever else might come to your mind that you want to share in this moment?
A number of really exciting ways that we're moving with the art. I say we with my sweetheart, who is an integral part of this offering. One of them, she's taking on a more ceremonial role. She has a background in ceremony, and we're working together to do transformational offerings on the beach. The first set that will be happening would be more oriented around this idea of transition, of release, particularly for those who have lost loved ones. We're wanting to create group ceremonies that include the artwork and creating beauty, knowing it will be washed away, like very soon. So that's one very interesting direction that we're going. But then the other one is the meditational retreats of mindfulness while creating the art. And then the workshops that will be happening within the next few months. We'll be doing these, and we'll have that posted on my Facebook site and on my website. Excited about. Yeah, thank you.
Sounds yummy. So, Andres, I really appreciate you being here and sharing your wisdom and just your openness. And wow, we had such a beautiful, this has probably been the most epic recording of an interview for me. I really appreciate you being here and so flexible.
You're very welcome. It's been an honor. I've appreciated talking with you. I really appreciate your perspective and what you drew from me.
Thank you. Once again, I want to give special thanks to Andres for being here with us this moment. Please, if inspired, connect to his information and links below and go to his website and see his gallery of images. They're absolutely incredible. We can't do them justice right here on this page with the flyby slideshow. So take some time, connect to his up-and-coming events. And I thought it'd be fitting to sign out with a longevity prayer. So if inspired, you can sit back and relax and connect to the quality of impermanence and remembering that nothing can continue without change. Until next time, this is She signing out with a deep bow, a full heart, bright eyes, a big smile, and a namaste. Be simply. Oh.